evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, August 24th, 2020. The survivor of a plane crash in South Sudan speaks out.
As we took off from Juba International Airport to Awil Firewall, we heard a sound on the engine on the right side of the plane. When that happened, the plane started to descend towards the ground.
And Sudanese Prime Minister acknowledges some challenges during his 1 year in office.
We lifted the Public Order Act, which had been used by the previous administration to oppress our citizens, especially women.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The survivor of Saturday's deadly plane crash in Juba says shortly after taking off from Juba International Airport, he and other passengers heard a loud bang from the right wing of the plane. The survivor says the pilot immediately told passengers he was returning to the airport, but the plane fell off the sky and burst into flames, killing 7 of its 8 passengers on board. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
A Russian-made Antonov 26 cargo plane carrying motorbikes, motorbike parts, food and other items crashed 3 kilometers from Juba International Airport, killing 7 of 8 passengers and crew on board. South Sudan in Focus spoke this morning to Peter Paul Unial, the lone survivor of the crash, at Modern Specialist Hospital in Juba, where he is being treated for third-degree burns on his entire body and a broken right leg and spinal cord.
As we took off from Juba International Airport to Awil Firewall, we heard a sound on the engine on the right side of the plane. When that happened, the plane started to descend towards the ground.
Nial says the pilot immediately informed passengers he was turning back to the airport, but seconds later, the engine shut down and the plane crashed in the Kemeru residential area.
The pilot lost control and could not turn back to land. As he tried to turn, then the engine shut down. The pilots could not do anything. The plane could not ascend further upwards and could not turn either. So it fell and busted into flames and it scattered us apart. When it crashed and hit the ground, people were thrown apart.
The AN-26 was built in 1969 and owned by a South Sudanese company called Southwest Aviation. In November 2015, South Sudan banned the Russian-made Antonov 12 from operating within its airspace after a fatal plane crash in Upper Nile. In April last year, President Kiir banned planes from entering South Sudan that had been in service for more than 20 years, limiting them to cargo only. David Subek, CEO of the South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority, says a plane's age does not matter and an investigation will determine the cause of the crash.
If you are talking about the age, how many aircrafts all over the world have crashed? And these are modern new aircrafts. The one happened in Ethiopia, the one happened in Ukraine, plus others, many. These were all new modern aircrafts. So let us not push that because the aircrafts are old or because we don't have regulation. There are many reasons that an accident can happen, whether we like it or not. Whether the aircraft is new or old, it can happen.
South Sudan Transport and Roads Minister Madut Biar says due to COVID-19 restrictions, he suspects some aviation companies could not service their aircrafts.
When coronavirus happened, Some plane, they could not fly back to where they are supposed to be serviced in the region or even beyond. Or maybe the engineers that are supposed to come and service the plane on the ground were locked down because of the coronavirus.
BR says his ministry and the Civil Aviation Authority has formed a technical committee to investigate the cause of the crash and ensure justice for the victims.
The government is going to take action or remedial measures so that accidents are reduced, including even the the pilot themselves and the service companies.
Companies operating in South Sudan must adhere to certain specifications of their aircrafts, including weight limits and regular maintenance procedures, according to the Civil Aviation Authority. The investigation team will send the plane's black box to Russian manufacturers to shed light on what caused the crash. The transport minister has not said whether or not investigators have yet recovered the black box. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
The Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok is reiterating his government commitment to achieve objectives of the Sudanese revolution, which called for democratic transformation in Sudan. Hamdok says his government made peace with rebels, reformed laws, and developed the economy. But he admits the country still faces many challenges, which he says could be overcome through cooperation and support of the Sudanese citizens. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
In a televised address to the nation 1 year after he took office, Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok reiterated his government's commitment to facilitate the appearance of ousted President Omar al-Bashir and four other Sudanese suspects before the ICC to answer questions about the alleged atrocities committed in Darfur region. Hamdok says his government has been engaged in peace talks with various armed groups and that soon the Sudanese people will celebrate the signing of a final peace agreement. He also pointed out the reforms that the government has carried out over the past years.
We lifted the Public Order Act, which had been used by the previous administration to oppress our citizens, especially women. We also amended a lot of laws that have been so oppressed to freedoms, such as the National Security Act and the Sudanese Panel Act. And we all continue to amend all other laws to ensure that we have laws that protect and respect human rights and dignity.
Hamdok admits the government is still struggling to revive the country's economy.
Our citizens are still facing heavy economic situation in their daily lives. I am aware of this development and I am so concerned about it. This is due to economic distortion that were left over by the previous administration, as well as due to some reforms that we are now working on.
Hamdok says the transitional government has made a significant progress toward the goal of removing Sudan from the U.S. list of countries that sponsor terrorism.
Sudanese people have never been in support to terrorism nor chaos that has been practiced by previous administration through its bad policies as they destroy the name of our people through their 1989 coup, which has destroyed the name of our country.
Osman Omar al-Badri, a resident of Khartoum's Mayo neighborhood who hails from the Darfur region, says the government needs to expedite transitional justice, especially for those who lost their loved ones.
We're still missing a lot of people. We are still facing problems with the issue of fair distribution of power and resources. There are states that are still experiencing a lot of intimidation from the elements of previous regime. Not much freedom space has been provided.
Sudanese writer and political analyst Abdul Munem Himid says Hamdok offered nothing new in his speech. He says the country's economy situation has gotten worse over the last year. Himet believes the elements of previous regime are still working day and night to hinder the efforts of the transitional government.
Now it is clear that there are still some hands of the deep state and they are playing dirty games to make a real drop and stop the process of having or making the demand of the revolution.
While some reforms in the justice system have taken place, Hemet says the government must still establish a legislative council to help hold the executive branch accountable for their deeds. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Yambio, where some residents and activists in Western Equatoria say having no high court judge in the state for the past 2 years denies citizens justice. The activists say suspects are often free because there is no judge to hear their cases. Seba Martin Murangi has more for VOA from Yambio.
In 2017, the magistrate who was presiding over cases in Western Equatoria State was recalled by the National Ministry of Justice in Juba to answer allegations of fraud and mismanagement of judicial properties. That judge later joined his colleagues who went on strike to demand better working conditions and resignation of the Chief Justice. President Salva Kiir later fired 15 judges who walked off the job. The East African Court of Justice ruled in July that President Salva Kiir's decision to fire 15 judges who went on strike in 2017 to demand better working conditions was unconditional and constitutional. Abel Dominic is executive director of the local NGO Civil Society Human Rights Organization. He says he wonders why Western Equatoria State has no judge.
A big state like this could not fail to have. But unfortunately, the state actually failed to have the high court judge. We had only public prosecutor and attorney, head of legal administration. Then these are the wing that which was supporting the state in terms of, you know the jurisdictions of the public prosecutor and attorney. They only investigate and prosecute the cases, but they cannot judge. They are not judges.
Hayat Gibson Waru, a project officer at Young Women Christian Association, says she is still waiting for justice to be delivered in a rape case involving her relative.
And we find out that the person who raped the lady was being freed, and the person is free, moving out, and there's no one to follow the case. Up to now, there's no any judgment taken so far. And this is affecting the whole community of Western Equatoria State, because you find there are many cases of people being murdered, girls being raped, and there's no one who is there to judge the people who are doing that.
Dominic says both complainants and suspects in the state are denied justice because of the absence of a state high court judge.
There are very many suspects who are on remand waiting for the trial by the High Court, by the first class magistrate. But when you go to the prison today, most of these people escape. You go to police, you find the case paper is there, the complainant is there, the file is there. How do you try the case? You cannot try the case whereby the suspect is not there.
The National Ministry of Justice, with support from the UN Development Programme, sent Justice Mujahid Abdallah a call as part of a mobile court programme to try cases for 1 month. For 10 days, Judge Akol's mobile court has heard 5 cases, including a murder case. Akol, who declined to have his voice recorded, says his team is working on many cases left over from last year, but many suspects either were freed on bail or escaped from custody. Dominic says while citizens of the state appreciate the mobile court, they need a permanent judge to help preside over cases.
The National Ministry of Justice should make sure that we have the High Court judge here and the county court judges. They are available to try such cases.
Civil society activists and some residents of Yambio say failure to try suspects in a court of law could embolden suspects to become repeat offenders. For VOA News, I'm Seba Martin Murangi in Yambio.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the crisis in Mali. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what would you most likely to accomplish in life, and how close are you to achieving it? My dream is to be one of the best filmmakers in Uganda and maybe in the world at large. With time and what I've done so far to achieve that, yes, I know I'm still very far, but I've written some scripts already.
To me, as a software developer, I still have a long way. But hopefully, God, I'll be able to make it.
I want to be a voice for the people who I meet and help people generally wherever I find myself. And I think that studying to become a lawyer is in the right direction to achieving that.
I would like to be a very, very great musician, a composer. For now, I'm not close there, but I'm working to get to the level I can actually achieve that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linar Mudu. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Despite regional and international condemnation, last week's coup in Mali has been met with widespread street celebrations in Bamako, Mali's capital. The arrest and the swift resignation of Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta followed months of protest over alleged government corruption, a broken economy, and ongoing extremist violence. It remains an open question whether the military's promise of return to democratic rule and national stability will be realized. VOA's Adam Philip spoke with John Campbell, Senior Fellow for African Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations and a former U.S. Ambassador, on whether he believes the U.S. can or will have any influence on what happens.
I don't think we have very much leverage over what's going on in Mali. We have a drone base in Niger. We provide certain logistical support for French forces that are operating in the Sahel. But so far as I know, we have no boots on the ground. I think we should be forthright in condemning what happened as a coup. But beyond that, I don't really, as a practical matter, see what the United States can do that will much influence the trajectory of events there.
The Western power that does have lots of leverage, of course, is France. It has 5,000 troops stationed in West Africa.
And I think we should all be watching very carefully the French reaction. The French government issued a statement denouncing the coup, but the French are ambiguous about this. Traditionally, the French view has been that the Sahel, including Mali, is the French equivalent of the near abroad. In other words, an area close to France and as such of primary concern to French security. Hence, 5,000 French troops in West Africa. The French public are concerned that the Sahel, including Mali, is becoming the Afghanistan of France. In other words, a conflict from which it's becoming impossible to extricate oneself. So I think the public view would tend to rein in any government interest in becoming more militarily involved, but not necessarily less militarily involved. So I would not anticipate, at least in the short term, any kind of French withdrawal from the Sahel. So what the French reaction is going to be beyond simple condemnation remains to be seen.
How do you think this French ambiguity and the international condemnation will actually play out?
It seems to me the most likely scenario is that the Malian military will announce that they are establishing an interim civilian government, ostensibly civilian, the military will control it, and that the job of this interim government will be to organize elections. And those steps will be broadly satisfactory to the international community, even though in terms of most Malians, it won't mean very much.
And to make the situation even more complicated, Mali has been plagued in recent years by an extremist insurgency. The deposed government's inability to bring them to heel was a major reason for the mass demonstrations that helped do it in. But there's now an even deeper political instability in the country as a result of the coup. That must be great news for the extremists.
I think that's exactly right. And what this does is it illustrates the secular government of Mali's inability to really function. And that makes the alternative that the Islamists are proposing more attractive.
What do you think is the real motivation of the military men who conducted the coup? I mean, they must have realized that this would mean more instability for Mali. Do you think some of those military leaders might actually have an interest in keeping the war with the extremists going for a while?
Some of them probably do, and some of them are probably making a fair amount of money out of it. But in terms of a broader motivation, I think there was a general fatigue with the instability, with the daily demonstrations, the threat of strikes that actually led to the arrest of the president. So too was the prime minister. So too was the minister of finance. So too was the head of the National Assembly. And the press says others have been arrested as well, but we don't know who they are.
African Americans are nearly four times more likely to die of COVID-19 than whites. But polls show more blacks than whites say they will not get a corona vaccine when one becomes available. A history of racism in medicine means trust in the health system is lower among African Americans. To help overcome those barriers, health officials are turning to a respected institution in the black community, barbershops. VOA's Steve Baragona has more.
I get all my education from the barbershop news.
Fred Spry owns a barbershop just north of Washington. He's close with his clients, he says.
Most everybody cuts friends and family. And if they were my friends and family, they became my friends and family after knowing.
That intimate relationship between barber and client has deep roots in African-American culture. Stephen Thomas heads the University of Maryland Center for Health Equity.
All this time throughout our history, black barbershops have been a place of refuge. They're like a sacred place.
What up, Fred? Thomas says that trusted relationship is an important one during the COVID-19 pandemic, because trust in doctors is low in the black community.
For many African Americans, it's part of the oral tradition that you don't trust people in white coats who come into your neighborhood to say they want to help you.
Thomas says that tradition is rooted in centuries of racism, including unethical medical experiments involving blacks.
That's the zone of privacy.
Thomas says though African Americans are dying of COVID-19 at much higher rates than whites, they are also more skeptical about a vaccine.
If it was available tomorrow, would you take it?
No.
No? Everybody's waiting for a vaccine.
I mean, you want my honest answer, or you want me to give it the political answer?
I want your honest answer.
But Thomas has a plan to build confidence.
No food, anything in the past 30 minutes, right?
No, sir.
For one thing, he wants black barbershops to offer COVID tests. For more than a decade, Thomas has been turning black barbers and stylists into health advocates. They've been helping educate their clients about conditions like HIV, heart disease, and cancer, which minorities suffer at higher rates than whites. Studies show it works. Fred Spry says when one of his clients got screened for cancer, his doctor found a tumor and removed it.
It felt good because I was like, I may have saved his life, and it may have saved his family from having to mourn over him, you know, much earlier than they had to.
There you go.
Thomas is arming his network of barbers and stylists with COVID facts to combat misinformation. And with the coming influenza season threatening to make a bad situation worse, Thomas wants barbers to talk to their clients about flu shots.
We need to be working on that right now. The reasons why people are not taking the flu shot may be the same reasons they won't take a COVID vaccine when the time comes. Fear, mistrust.
That could change, he says, with a shave and a haircut and a word from someone they trust. Steve Baragona, Kensington, Maryland.
A week ago, Tanzanian human rights defenders Coalition suspended its operations in the country due to what the group referred to as intimidation and meddling by security forces. Tanzania's Electoral Commission also disqualified the group from its list of organizations authorized to provide voter education and monitor the country's October 2020 elections. In June this year, the group announced it had received a grant of 277 million shillings, about $2.5 million, from one of its donors for protection of human rights defenders and journalists ahead of Tanzania's October 28 elections. Anna Aloy Henga is the executive director of Legal and Human Rights Center of Tanzania, an affiliate of the Tanzanian Human Rights Defenders Coalition.
No, it's not us who suspended the operation. It's a sister organization called Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition. We didn't suspend our operation, but we are a member to that coalition.
So you are a member of the Tanzania Human Rights Coalition. So are your operations also suspended?
No, we are continuing as usual. It's only the coalition secretariat which has been suspended.
Why did they suspend the operations?
What the authority did is to freeze their bank account. When they went to ask, they were told you did not comply with the recent NGO regulation. The regulation requires organizations to send the donor quota to the public and also to send to Treasury. So they were told that you did not comply to that. When they reported to the police, the CEO of the coalition was arrested for some hours and was released on bail for non-compliance of the regulations. Later on, the Inspector General of Police responded that they freeze their account because they fear maybe there's something fishy with their account because they received a huge amount of money, more than 6 billion Tanzanian shillings. I know there are a lot of issues of intimidation, the shadowing space, it's happening, so it might be just excuse to make sure they are not operating freely.
You alluded to intimidation, and somebody mentioned the other day also that this might be government meddling or intimidation.
You know, we are heading to 2020 general election in October. So any voice which is coming up is being silenced. They started with political parties, the vocal political parties, opposition parties, to the media. You heard about the media being shut down, being fined. You heard about international media like BBC and the Voice of America and VOA. You cannot operate free radios here in Tanzania. Then it came to CSO, civil organization, to individuals. Well, every voice which is coming up is being silenced or intimidated so that you remain silent. This is our new normal now.
I was reading that the Electoral Commission barred or prevented the Human Rights Defenders Coalition from carrying out voter education. What does your organization do, and are you part of that? Are you being able to be involved in the electoral process?
We've been banned. We also began to receive accreditation to observe the elections. Other organizations have been accredited. I think they will do that work. But our organization, Tanzania Human Rights Defenders, Legal and Human Rights Center, all the big organizations and experienced and the organizations with integrity have not been accredited.
So your organization will not be able to be involved in voter matters during the electoral process. You will not.
We will not. We are not accredited, so we cannot.
That's Anna Alois Henga, Executive Director of Legal and Human Rights Center of Tanzania. She was speaking with us from Dar es Salaam. That's our show for this Monday. How about leaving you with Bolingo Eleki by Jonas Balela?
Grâce les Maé, King Mounga, Bouyoka le géant Jonas Balela, l'avocat défenseur des couples.
Papa, te yangayi. Moumaya bolingo, on a polia yango. Il faut de la patience. Matate zanga kate. Nakata bolingo. Couple parfait zalite. Poto sanaba defo. Yo garnier monte manangaï. Loco la set a roi. Ton calé vaut mieux que mille mots d'amour.
We've been listening to Jonas Balela with the song Bolingo Eleki, which literally means there's a lot of love, or too much love. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.